Chapter 7. The Sky is Falling. The next thing Jack knew, he was lying on the stone patio. The patio stones were trembling. A rumbling sound came from the ground. Jack raised his head. Annie was on the ground, too.
"You okay?" said Annie.
Jack nodded. Everything was shaking and crashing down around them. Pots, plants, the mermaid fountain. Water from the goldfish pond sloshed onto the patio and Jack and Annie. They both jumped up just as roof tiles began falling into the garden.
"We better get inside," said Jack.
He grabbed his leather bag. Then he and Annie stumbled into the scroll library. Giant cracks split the stone floor as Jack and Annie ran to a window and looked out. Glowing rocks were bursting through the sky above Mount Vesuvius. The whole top of the mountain had blown off.
"What's happening?" said Annie.
"I'll check," said Jack.
He pulled out the Roman book. He read aloud from the section about the volcano.
"When a volcano erupts, hot melted rock called magma is pushed to the surface of the earth. Once it gets outside the volcano, it's called lava."
"Lava? That's like burning mud," said Jack.
"It covers everything," cried Annie.
Jack kept reading.
"There was no running lava from Mount Vesuvius. The magma from the volcano cooled so fast that it froze into small grayish-white rocks called pumice. A pumice rock is very light and has holes like a sponge."
"That doesn't sound too bad," said Annie.
"Wait, there's more," said Jack.
He read on.
"A great cloud of pumice, ash, and burning rock shot miles into the air. When it rained down on Pompeii, it completely buried the town."
"Oh, man," said Jack. "This is a major disaster."
"It's getting dark," said Annie.
Jack looked out again. A thick black cloud was spreading over the earth like an umbrella. The sun vanished as the sky turned smoky gray.
"That must be the cloud of pumice and ash," said Jack.
Just then the ground trembled again. Chunks of plaster from the ceiling fell on the scrolls.
"We have to get out of here," said Annie.
They ran from the scroll library into the garden. Ash and pumice began to fall.
"We have to cover our heads," said Jack.
They hurried from the garden into the dining room.
"Look, pillows," said Annie. "Let's put them on our heads."
They hurried to the couches beside the table and each grabbed a pillow.
"Tie it around your head with your belt," said Jack.
They both pulled off the belts from around their tunics. Then they tied on the pillows like giant hats. A chunk of ceiling crashed down near them.
"Let's get out of here," said Jack.
They stepped over pieces of fallen roof tiles and ran into the main hall. They pushed open the front door. A blast of heat and dust nearly knocked them over. And when they stepped outside, pumice rained down onto their pillow hats.
"Run!"
cried Annie. They ran from the vacation villa into the dark, burning streets. Chapter 8. Nightmare at Noon. In the distance, fire burst from Mount Vesuvius. Burning rocks and fiery ash fell from the sky. The hot, dusty air smelled like rotten eggs as Jack and Annie rushed down the street. In the forum, everyone, shoppers, soldiers, gladiators, fruit sellers, was running in every direction. Stalls had collapsed. Carts were sliding. Jack froze. He didn't know where to go.
"That way," shouted Annie.
Jack followed her as they ran past the Temple of Jupiter. Its mighty columns had fallen and its walls were crumbling. They ran past the public baths just as its roof caved in.
"Which way now?"
shouted Annie.
"The treehouse is in the olive grove," Jack said as they kept running.
"The olive grove and the bridge are near the street with all those open shops," said Annie. "Remember the bridge?"
Jack looked up at the erupting mountain. A red-hot cloud billowed over it. Fires burned on its slopes.
"Head in the direction of Mount Vesuvius," he said. "It was behind us as we came into Pompeii."
"Right,"
cried Annie. So while others ran away from Mount Vesuvius, Jack and Annie ran toward it. On the street with the open shops, baskets and broken jars rolled over the cracked stones. Jack and Annie ran past the bakery and the shoe shop.
They ran past the butcher shop and barber shop. All the shops were empty. Their owners had fled. The closer they got to the volcano, the more the ground trembled. The darker and dustier it got.
"This is just like my nightmare," cried Annie.
Jack choked on the rotten fumes. His eyes watered.
"Look, the olive grove," shouted Annie. "The treehouse is just over there. Come on."
Jack could hardly see, but he followed Annie. They left the street and ran to the dried-up stream near the olive grove.
"Where's the bridge?" cried Annie.
They looked around wildly. The bridge had vanished. Chapter 9. Save Us.
"The bridge must have caved in," cried Annie.
They stared at the dried-up stream. Pumice had piled up in huge drifts like snow.
"We'll have to get through that stuff to get across," said Jack.
He and Annie slid down the bank onto the piles of pumice. As they started to move across it, more and more fell. Jack tried to move through the millions of warm, grayish-white pebbles, but he was trapped.
"I'm stuck," cried Annie.
"Me too," said Jack.
"Remember what Morgan said,"
said Annie. At the moment, Jack couldn't remember anything. He was too tired and dazed.
"In your darkest hour, only the ancient story can save you," cried Annie. "Where's your bag?"
Jack lifted his bag into the air, above the sea of pumice. Annie grabbed it and pulled out the ancient scroll. She held it up to the dark sky.
"Save us, story," she shouted.
Jack felt himself sink deeper and deeper into the pumice. Suddenly, he heard a deep voice say, "Rise, son." Then someone lifted Jack up into the air. A great flash of fire lit the dusty darkness. In the red light, Jack saw the biggest, strongest man he'd ever seen in his life. The man looked like a gladiator, but even bigger than the ones they had seen earlier. He held Jack with one hand and Annie with the other. He placed them both on the other bank of the stream.
"Run," the giant gladiator boomed, "before it's too late."
Jack and Annie didn't stop to ask any questions. Together they charged through the olive grove. They jumped over fallen branches. They leaped over great cracks in the earth. Finally they came to the tree with the magic treehouse. They grabbed the rope ladder and scrambled up to the treehouse.
"Where's the Pennsylvania book?" Jack shouted.
He was too blinded by ash and dust to find the book that always took them home.
"I've got it," cried Annie. "I wish we could go there."
Jack felt the treehouse start to spin. It spun faster and faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely, wonderfully, peacefully still. Chapter 10. A Simple Explanation. Jack didn't move. He had never been so tired in all his life.
"Breathe," said Annie.
Jack gulped in cool, clean air. He opened his eyes. He couldn't see a thing.
"Take off your glasses," said Annie. "They're filthy."
Jack took off his glasses. The first thing he saw was his backpack. The white tunics and lace-up sandals were gone. So were their pillow hats and the leather bag. Jack let out a long, deep breath. As he cleaned his glasses on his shirt, a voice came from behind him.
"I'm very glad to see you safe and sound."
Morgan Le Fay stood in the corner of the treehouse. She looked as lovely and mysterious as ever.
"Happy to be home?" she asked.
Jack nodded. The sound of the erupting volcano still echoed in his ears.
It was pretty scary,"
he said in a hoarse voice.
"I know, but you were truly brave," said Morgan. "You witnessed a famous event in history. Nowadays, scientists study the remains of Pompeii to find out more about Roman times."
"I feel bad for all those people," said Annie.
"Yes," said Morgan, "but most of the people of Pompeii did escape. The city wasn't completely buried by ash until the next day."
"We were almost trapped," said Annie, "but we asked the ancient story to save us. Then a huge gladiator helped us."
Jack reached into his pack. He breathed a sigh of relief.
The scroll was still there. He took it out. It was covered with dust and ashes.
"Here's the story," said Jack.
He handed it to Morgan.
"I am deeply grateful," she said softly. "You risked everything to bring this to me. I can never thank you enough."
"Don't worry about it," said Jack.
He didn't want Morgan to know how scared he had been.
"Yeah, no problem," said Annie.
Morgan smiled. "You are amazing, Master Librarians," she said. "Do you think you're up to rescuing another ancient story?"
"Yes,"
said Annie.
"Now?" said Jack.
Actually, he was a little tired now. Morgan laughed. "No, take a nice vacation. Come back 2 weeks from today. Then you will take a trip to ancient China," she said.
"Ancient China? Wow," said Annie.
"Oh, man," said Jack. "Go home now and rest," said Morgan. She handed Jack his pack.
"Thanks," he said. "Bye."
"Bye," said Annie.
Morgan gave them a little wave. Then Annie and Jack left the treehouse and headed down the rope ladder. When they reached the ground, Jack looked up.
"Morgan," he called. "What is that story about, the one we just rescued?"
"It's called The Strongest Man in the World," said Morgan. "It's a lost tale about Hercules."
"Hercules?" said Jack.
"Yes, he was one of the heroes of the Greeks and the Romans," said Morgan. "He was a son of Jupiter."
"Oh, wow! Now I get it," said Annie.
"I'm taking it back now to Camelot's library," said Morgan. "Everyone will be so excited to read it, thanks to you." She waved to them. "Goodbye for now." As she waved, the wind began to whirl. The treehouse began to spin. In a blur of shadow and light, Morgan and the magic treehouse were gone. Jack and Annie started walking through the woods.
"Get it? Get it?" said Annie.
"Get what?" said Jack.
"We were saved by Hercules," said Annie. "We asked the story to save us, and Hercules appeared."
"That's not possible," said Jack. "It was just some gladiator guy. The story of Hercules is a myth. That means he never really lived."
They left the woods and started up their street.
"I know it's a myth," said Annie, "but I have a simple explanation."
"What?" said Jack.
"Hercules is a myth to people in this time," said Annie. "But in Roman times, lots of people believed he was real. So since we were in Roman times, he was real to us."
"I don't know," said Jack.
"Did you ever hear the saying," said Annie, "when in Rome, do as the Romans do?"
Jack laughed. "Yeah." He looked up at the sky.
"Thanks, Hercules," he said softly. "Whatever you are."
"Jack! Annie!" their dad called from their front porch. "Time to go!"
"Oh, brother, I forgot," said Jack.
"Yeah, I hope nothing exciting happens on our vacation," said Annie.
"Yeah," said Jack. "I hope it's really, really boring."
"Hurry!" their dad said.
"Coming!"
they called. Then they took off running for home and a restful vacation. Day of the Dragon King. Chapter 1. The Bamboo Book. Annie peeked into Jack's room.
"Ready to go to China?" she asked.
Jack took a deep breath.
"Sure,"
he answered.
"Bring your secret library card," Annie said. "I have mine in my pocket."
"Yep,"
said Jack. He opened his top dresser drawer and took out a thin wooden card. The letters ML on it shimmered in the light. Jack dropped the card into his backpack. Then he threw in his notebook and a pencil.
"Let's go," said Annie.
Jack pulled on his pack and followed her.
"What are we in for today?" he wondered.
"Bye, Mom,"
said Annie as they passed their mom in the kitchen. "Where are you going?" she asked.
"China,"
said Annie.
"Great,"
said their mom. She winked at them. "Have fun."
"Fun,"
thought Jack. He was afraid that fun wasn't quite the right word.
"Just wish us luck," he said, as he and Annie headed out the front door.
"Good luck," their mother called.
"If only she knew we weren't pretending," Jack whispered to Annie.
"Yeah,"
said Annie, grinning. Outside, the sun shone brightly. Birds sang. Crickets chirped. Jack and Annie walked up their street toward the Frog Creek Woods.
"I wonder if the weather will be this nice in China," Annie said.
"I don't know. Remember, Morgan said this would be a very scary adventure," said Jack.
"They're always scary," said Annie. "But we always meet animals who help us, or people."
"True," said Jack.
"I bet we meet someone great today," said Annie.
Jack smiled. He was starting to feel excited now, instead of scared. "Let's hurry," he said. They ran into the Frog Creek Woods. They slipped between the tall trees until they came to a huge oak.
"Hello,"
came a soft voice they knew well. They looked up. Morgan was peering down from the magic treehouse. "Ready for your next mission as master librarians?" she asked.
"Yes,"
said Jack and Annie. They grabbed the rope ladder and started up.
"Are we still going to China?"
asked Annie when they had climbed into the treehouse.
"Indeed," said Morgan. "You're going to ancient China. Here is the title of the story you must find."
She held up a long, thin strip of wood. It looked like a ruler, except it had strange writing on it instead of numbers. "Long ago, the Chinese discovered how to make paper. It was one of the world's most important discoveries," said Morgan. "But you are going to a time earlier than that, to a time when books were written on bamboo strips, like this one."
"Wow," said Annie, pointing at the figures on the bamboo. "So this is Chinese writing?"
"Yes," said Morgan. "Just as we have letters, Chinese writing is made up of many characters. Each one stands for a different thing or idea. These characters are the title of an ancient Chinese legend. You must find the first writing of the legend before the Imperial Library is destroyed."
"Hurry, let's go," said Annie.
"Wait, we need our research book," said Jack.
"Yes, you do," said Morgan. From the folds of her robe, she pulled out a book. On the cover was the title, "The Time of the First Emperor." Morgan handed the book to Jack. "This research book will guide you," she said. "But remember, in your darkest hour, only the old legend can save you."
"But we have to find it first," said Annie.
"Exactly," said Morgan. She handed Jack the bamboo strip, and he slipped it into his pack. Jack pushed his glasses into place, then pointed at the cover of their research book.
"I wish we could go there," he said.
The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 2, The Cowherd.
"Oh, wow," Annie said. "These clothes feel so soft. And look, I have a pocket for my secret library card."
Jack opened his eyes. Their clothes had magically changed. They no longer wore jeans, t-shirts, and sneakers. Instead, they had on baggy pants, loose shirts, straw shoes, and round hats. Annie's shirt had a pocket in it. Jack saw that his backpack had become a rough cloth sack. Inside were his research book, his notebook, his library card, and the bamboo strip.
"Cows," said Annie, looking out the window.
Jack looked out, too. The treehouse had landed in a lone tree in a sunny field. Cows grazed, and a young man stood watching over them. At the edge of the field was a farmhouse. Beyond the house was a walled city.
"It looks so peaceful," said Annie.
"You can never be sure," said Jack. "Remember, Pompeii looked peaceful before the volcano went off."
"Oh, yeah," said Annie.
"Let's see what the book says," said Jack.
He reached in the sack and pulled out the China book. He opened it and read aloud. "Over 2,000 years ago, China was ruled by its first emperor. Because he chose the dragon to be his symbol, he was called the Dragon King. In China, dragons are seen as brave and powerful creatures."
Dragon King, that sounds a little scary, said Jack.
I like his outfit, said Annie.
Next to the writing was a picture. It showed a man wearing a rich, flowing robe with wide sleeves. He also wore a tall hat with beads hanging from it. Jack pulled out his notebook and wrote, First Emperor, called Dragon King.
The book we need must be in the Dragon King's library, said Annie. I bet his palace is in that city.
Jack looked up.
Right, he said, and that's how to get there.
He pointed across the field to a dirt road that led to the walled city.
Good plan, said Annie.
She climbed out of the treehouse and started down the rope ladder. Jack threw the china book and his notebook into his sack. He slung the sack over his shoulder and followed Annie. When they reached the ground, they started through the field.
Look, that guy is waving at us, said Annie.
The man tending the cows was shouting and waving. He started running toward them.
Uh-oh, what's he want? Said Jack.
A moment later, the man stood in their path. He was young and handsome with a kind face.
Can you do me a great favor? He asked. I would be most grateful.
Of course, said Annie.
Give a message to the silk weaver. You will see her at the farmhouse, said the young man. Tell her to meet me here at twilight.
Sure, no problem, said Annie.
The young man smiled.
Thank you, he said.
Then he started to leave.
Wait, excuse me, said Jack. Do you know where we can find the Imperial Library?
A look of horror crossed the man's kind face.
Why?
He whispered.
Oh, I just wondered, said Jack.
The young man shook his head.
Beware of the Dragon King, he said. Whatever you do, beware.
Then he turned and ran back to his cows.
Oh, man, whispered Jack. Now we know one thing for sure.
What?
Asked Annie.
This place is not as peaceful as it seems, Jack said.
Chapter 3. The Silk Weaver. Jack and Annie kept walking across the pasture toward the road. Annie stopped when they neared the farmhouse.
We have to find the silk weaver and give her the message, she said.
Let's do that on our way back, said Jack. I'm worried about finding the Imperial Library.
What if we don't have time? Said Annie. We promised, and he was so nice.
Jack sighed.
Okay, he said, but let's find her fast, and remember to keep your head down so no one will notice us.
Jack and Annie bowed their heads as they headed toward the house. As they got closer, Jack peeked out from under his hat. An ox pulled a cart filled with hay. Men hoed the ground. Women pushed wheelbarrows piled high with grain.
There, said Annie.
She pointed to an open porch where a young woman was weaving cloth on a loom.
That must be her.
Annie ran to the silk weaver. Jack looked around to see if anyone was watching. Luckily, all the farm workers seemed too busy to notice anything. Still looking around carefully, Jack walked toward the porch. Annie was already talking to the silk weaver.
What did he say?
The young woman asked. Her voice was soft but strong. Her dark eyes glowed with happiness.
He said you should meet him in the field at twilight, said Annie. He's so handsome.
Yes, he is.
The silk weaver gave Annie a shy smile. Then she reached down to a basket near her loom and picked up a ball of yellow thread.
It was very brave of you to bring the message, she said. Please accept this silk thread as my thank you.
She handed Annie the ball of silk.
It's beautiful, said Annie. Feel.
She handed it to Jack. The thread was smooth and soft.
How do you make silk? Said Jack.
It is made from the cocoons of silk worms, said the weaver.
Really? Worms? That's neat, said Jack. Let me write that down.
He reached into his sack.
Please don't, said the silk weaver. The making of silk is China's most valuable secret. Anyone who steals the secret will be arrested. The Dragon King will have him put to death.
Oops, said Jack.
He dropped the ball of silk into his sack.
"I think you must leave quickly," whispered the silk weaver. "You have been seen."
Jack looked over his shoulder. A man was pointing at them. "Let's go," he said.
"Bye," said Annie. "Good luck on your date."
"Thank you," the silk weaver said.
"Come on," said Jack. They hurried away from the silk weaver. "Stop!" someone shouted.
"Run!"
said Annie. Chapter 4. The Great Wall. Jack and Annie ran around the farmhouse. At the back was an ox cart filled with bags of grain. There was no one in sight. The shouting behind them got louder. Jack and Annie looked at each other, then dived into the back of the wooden cart. They buried themselves in the middle of the bags of grain. Jack's heart pounded as the shouts came closer. He held his breath and waited for the people to leave. Suddenly the cart lurched forward. Someone was driving them away. Jack and Annie peeked over the bags. Jack saw the back of the driver. He was calmly steering the ox cart over the dirt road. They were on their way to the walled city. Jack and Annie ducked down again.
"This is great," whispered Annie. "All we have to do is jump out when we get into the city."
"Yep," Jack said softly.
"Then we'll find the Imperial Library, find the book, and get back to the Magic Treehouse."
"No problem," whispered Annie.
"Whoa!" The cart slowly came to a halt. Jack held his breath. He heard voices and the heavy tramping of feet, lots of feet. He and Annie peeked out.
"Oh, man,"
he whispered. A long line of men was crossing the road in front of the cart. They carried axes, shovels, and hoes. Guards marched alongside them.
"Let's find out what's happening," said Jack.
He reached into a sack and pulled out the china book. Pushing his glasses into place, he found a picture of the workers. He read,
"The Dragon King forced many of his subjects to start building a wall to protect China from invaders. Later, emperors made the wall even longer. Finally, it stretched 3,700 miles along China's border. The Great Wall of China is the longest structure ever built."
"Wow, the Great Wall of China," said Jack.
"I've heard of that," said Annie.
"Who hasn't?" said Jack. "Those guys are going to work on it right now."
Just then, someone grabbed Jack and Annie. They looked up. It was the driver of the cart.
"Who are you?" he asked angrily.
We
Jack didn't know what to say. The man's gaze fell on the open book in Jack's hands. His mouth dropped open. He let go of Jack and Annie. Slowly, he reached out and touched the book. He looked back at Jack and Annie with wide eyes.
"What is this?"
he said. Chapter 5. The Scholar.
"It's a book from our country," said Jack. "Your books are made of bamboo, but ours are made of paper. Actually, your country invented paper, but later, in the future."
The man looked confused.
"Never mind," said Annie. "It's for reading. It's for learning about faraway places."
The man stared at them. Tears filled his eyes.
"What's wrong?"
Annie asked softly.
"I love reading and learning," he said.
"So do I," said Jack.
The man smiled.
"You don't understand. I am dressed as a farmer," he said. "But in truth, I am a scholar."
"What's a scholar?" said Annie.
"We are great readers, learners, and writers," he said. "We have long been the most honored citizens in China."
The scholar's smile faded.
"But now scholars are in danger," he said, "and many of us have gone into hiding."
"Why?"
said Jack.
"The Dragon King is afraid of the power of our books and learning," said the scholar. "He wants people to think only what he wants them to think. Any day he may order the burning of the books."
Annie gasped.
"Does that mean what I think it means?" said Jack.
The scholar nodded.
"All the books in the Imperial Library will be burned," he said.
"That's rotten," said Annie.
"Indeed,
It is, the scholar said quietly. Listen, we have a mission to get a book from that library, said Jack.
Who are you?
Asked the scholar.
Show him, said Annie.
She reached into her shirt pocket as Jack reached into his sack. They brought out the secret library cards. The letters shimmered in the sunlight. The scholar's mouth dropped open again.
You are master librarians, he said.
I have never met ones so honored who were so young. He bowed to show his respect.
Thank you, said Jack and Annie.
They bowed back to him.
How can I help you? Asked the scholar.
We need to go to the Imperial Library and find this book, said Jack.
He held out Morgan's bamboo strip to the scholar.
We will go to the Imperial Library, said the scholar. As for the story, I know it well. It is a true one, written not long ago. But I warn you, we will be in great danger.
We know, said Annie.
The scholar smiled.
I am happy to be doing something I believe in again, said the scholar. Let us go.
They all climbed into the front of the cart. The long line of wall builders was marching in the distance. As the oxen started forward, the scholar turned to Jack and Annie.
Where are you from? He asked.
Frog Creek, Pennsylvania, said Annie.
I have never heard of it, said the scholar. Do they have a library there?
Oh, sure. There's a library in every town, said Jack. In fact, there are probably thousands of libraries in our country.
And millions of books, said Annie, and no one burns them.
Right, said Jack. Everyone gets to go to school to learn to read them.
The scholar stared at him and shook his head.
It sounds like paradise, he said.
Chapter 6. The Dragon King. The ox cart bumped across the wooden bridge that crossed over a moat. Then it passed guards standing by giant wooden gates.
Are the gates ever closed? Jack asked.
Oh, yes, every day at sunset, said the scholar. When the gong sounds, the gates close. The bridge comes up and the city is sealed shut for the night.
I guess visitors have to leave before that happens, Annie said, or they'll be stuck here for the whole night, right?
Yes, said the scholar.
The cart bumped between the city gates. Rows of small houses were bunched together on either side of the street. They were made of mud with straw roofs. People cooked over outdoor fires. They washed their clothes in wooden tubs. As the ox cart bumped along, the houses got larger. These were made of painted wood and pottery tiles. They all had curved roofs.
Why are those roofs like that? Asked Jack.
To keep away the bad spirits, said the scholar.
How do they do that? Said Annie.
The spirits can only travel in straight lines, said the scholar.
Wow,
whispered Annie. The cart went by some open tea shops. Then it passed a large market square filled with stalls and shoppers. People were buying and selling fish, chickens, firewood, wagon wheels, silk cloth, furs, and jade jewelry. Some people were lined up at a stall filled with tiny cages.
What's for sale there? Said Annie.
Crickets, the scholar said. They make good pets. You can feed them tea leaves and enjoy their delicate song.
The cart moved on toward the Dragon King's walled palace. They stopped in front of the palace gates.
Grain delivery!
The scholar shouted up to the guard at the tower. The guard waved them through. Inside were beautiful gardens and huge mounds of earth surrounded by a low brick wall.
That is the imperial burial grounds, said the scholar, pointing at the mounds.
Who is buried there? Asked Jack.
The ancestors of the Dragon King, said the scholar.
What are ancestors? Annie asked.
They are the people in your family who lived before you, said the scholar. Someday the Dragon King himself will be buried there. 300,000 workers have been building his burial tomb.
Oh, man, said Jack.
He looked over his shoulder at the burial grounds. He wondered why it took so many workers to build a tomb.
"No," said the scholar.
Jack whirled around.
"What's wrong?" he asked.
The scholar pointed at the palace courtyard. A dark cloud of smoke was rising into the sky.
"Fire,"
said the scholar.
"The books," said Jack.
"Hurry,"
said Annie.
The scholar snapped the reins. The oxen trotted up the stone path. When the cart rolled into the courtyard, soldiers were everywhere. Some threw wood on a huge bonfire. Others were carrying bamboo strips down the steep stairs that led from the palace.
"Are those books?" asked Jack.
"Yes, the strips are tied together into different bundles," moaned the scholar. "Each bundle is a book."
"Look,"
said Annie, pointing to the palace entrance. Stepping outside was a man in a rich flowing robe and a tall hat. Jack knew him at once. The Dragon King. Chapter 7. The Burning of the Books. The Dragon King watched the bonfire as it blazed up toward the sky. Around the fire, the air was thick and wavy. Bamboo books were stacked beside the fire, waiting to be burned.
"Hurry,"
said the scholar. They jumped down from the cart and joined the crowd by the bonfire. The Dragon King shouted to the soldiers. They began throwing the books into the fire. The bamboo crackled as it burned.
"Stop!"
cried Annie. Jack grabbed her.
"Quiet,"
he said. Annie pulled away.
"Stop!"
she shouted again, but her voice was lost in the noise of the roaring fire.
"There's your story,"
said the scholar. He pointed to a bamboo book that had fallen off a waiting stack.
"I'll get it,"
said Annie. She dashed over to the book.
"Annie!"
cried Jack, but she had already snatched up the bundle of bamboo strips and was charging back to them.
"Got it! Quick, put it in your sack," she said.
Jack put the bundle of bamboo strips in his sack. Then he looked around fearfully. He gasped. The Dragon King was glaring at them. Then he headed their way.
"Seize them!" the Dragon King shouted. "Run through the burial grounds," the scholar said to Jack and Annie. "The soldiers will be afraid to follow. They fear the spirits of the ancestors."
"Thanks," said Jack. "Thanks for everything."
"Good luck,"
cried Annie. Then she and Jack took off. Soldiers shouted after them. An arrow whizzed by. But Jack and Annie kept running. They ran down the path to the burial grounds. They jumped over the low brick wall and ran between the huge mounds of earth. Suddenly arrows filled the air around them. The archers were shooting from the tower.
"Look!" cried Jack.
There was a doorway in one of the mounds. Jack and Annie ducked inside. They were in a long hall lit with oil lamps.
"It's so quiet,"
said Annie. She walked down the passageway.
"Hey, there are some steps here."
"Don't go any farther," said Jack.
"Why not?"
said Annie.
"We don't know what's down there," said Jack. "This is a burial tomb, remember? It's creepy."
"Let's just take a quick look," said Annie. "Maybe it's the way out of here."
Jack took a deep breath.
"You might be right," he said.
"Okay, but go slow."
He didn't want to stumble upon a dead body. Annie started down the steep steps. Jack followed. The lamps lit their way as they kept going down and down. Finally, they reached the bottom. Jack blinked. Even though oil lamps glowed everywhere, it was hard to see at first. When Jack's eyes got used to the strange light, his heart nearly stopped.
"Oh, man,"
he breathed. They were in a room filled with soldiers, thousands of them. Chapter 8. The Tomb. Jack and Annie stood frozen. The silent soldiers did, too. Finally, Annie spoke.
"They're fake,"
she said.
"Fake,"
whispered Jack.
"They're not real,"
she said.
"They look real,"
said Jack. Annie walked straight toward the front row of soldiers. Jack held his breath. Annie pulled the soldier's nose.
"Fake,"
she said.
"Oh, brother,"
said Jack. He walked over to the soldier and touched his painted face. It was as hard as stone.
"It's amazing," Jack said.
Annie nodded.
"It's like a museum."
She walked down a row between two lines of soldiers.
"Wait, this is spooky," said Jack. "What is this place?"
He put down his sack and pulled out the China book. He found a picture of the frozen army and read aloud.
"The Dragon King had 7,000 life-size clay figures made for his burial tomb. The clay was baked and painted.
The Dragon King hoped that the clay army would protect him after he died."
"It's like the pyramid in ancient Egypt," said Jack. "Remember? The queen was buried with a boat and lots of things to take to the afterlife."
He looked around.
"Annie?"
"I'm here,"
she called. She was far down another row.
"Come back here," yelled Jack.
"No, you come here," said Annie. "It's so cool. All their faces are different."
Jack threw the book into his sack. Then he hurried down the row to Annie.
"Look," she said. "Just look."
In the flickering lamplight, they wandered down the rows of soldiers. No two soldiers had the same nose, the same eyes, or the same mouth.
"Oh, man, no wonder so many people had to work on this tomb," said Jack.
"They really did a good job," said Annie.
"Yeah," said Jack.
There were kneeling archers and foot soldiers dressed in red and black armor. There were real bronze swords, daggers, axes, spears, bows, and arrows. There were even life-size wooden chariots with horses. The horses looked completely real. They were different colors with white teeth and red tongues.
"I have to take some notes about all this," said Jack.
He pulled out his notebook and pencil. Then, kneeling on the brick floor, he wrote, "No two faces the same, not even the horses."
"Jack," said Annie. "You know what?"
"What?"
"I think we're lost," she said.
"Lost?" Jack stood up. "We're not lost."
"Yeah? Then which way is out?" said Annie.
Jack looked around. All he could see were rows of soldiers. In front of them, to the right, to the left, behind them, nothing but clay soldiers.
"Which way did we come?" said Annie.
"I don't know," said Jack.
All the rows looked the same. They stretched out endlessly. Jack tried not to panic.
"I'd better look this up," he said.
"Forget it," said Annie. "Morgan said the research book would guide us, but in our darkest hour, only the ancient legend would save us."
"Is this our darkest hour?" asked Jack.
Annie nodded.
"Yeah, it's pretty dark."
"It does seem to be getting darker in here," thought Jack. The air was getting thicker, too. It seemed harder to breathe. "Let's ask for help," said Jack.
He reached into the sack and pulled out the bamboo book. He held it up and said,
"Save us."
As Jack waited, the tomb seemed unbearably quiet. Jack held the book up again.
"Please help us find our way out," he said.
He and Annie kept waiting, but nothing happened. The air was growing even thicker. The light was getting dimmer. The countless rows of soldiers seemed creepier. Help did not come. Jack felt faint.
I guess we'll just have to...
"Look," Annie said.
"What?"
"The ball of thread. It rolled out of your sack," she said.
"So what?" said Jack.
He looked at his cloth sack lying on the floor. The ball of yellow silk thread had rolled out, and it was still rolling, leaving a trail of yellow thread.
Chapter 9. The Silk Path.
"What's going on?" said Jack.
"I don't know," said Annie, "but we better follow it."
She hurried after the ball of silk thread. Jack put the bamboo book into his sack and took off after her. They followed the trail of thread down the row where it turned down another row.
"Hey, that's impossible," said Jack. "That's scientifically impossible."
"I told you, it's magic," cried Annie.
Jack couldn't believe it, but he kept following the thread. Suddenly, the trail of thread was gone. The ball had completely unrolled. Jack and Annie stood still for a moment and caught their breath.
What now? Said Jack.
I guess we go up those stairs, Annie said.
What stairs? Said Jack.
There.
Jack looked through the dim light and saw the entrance to a stairway only a few feet away.
Let's get out of here, he said.
They ran up the stairs. At the top, they saw that they were in the hall that led to the entrance of the mound. They walked and walked and walked down the lamp-lit passage. Finally, Jack stopped.
I don't remember this hall being so long, he said.
Me neither, said Annie. I guess those weren't the same stairs that we went down.
What should we do now? Said Jack.
We better keep going, said Annie.
Yeah, we don't have much choice, said Jack.
They started walking again. They rounded a corner and came to a door.
Oh, great, said Annie.
Wait, we don't know what's on the other side, said Jack. Go slow, be careful.
Okay,
said Annie. Slowly and carefully, she opened the door. Then she peeked out.
Yippee,
she said softly. Annie stepped into the fading daylight. Jack stepped out after her. The sun had gone down. They were standing outside the gate of the Dragon King's palace. They could see the market not far away. The stalls were closing for the day.
We're safe, said Annie.
Jack breathed a huge sigh of relief. Just then, a gong sounded. It was coming from the tower of the city walls.
Oh, man, they're going to close the gates, said Jack.
He clutched his sack as they took off. They charged up the street. They ran past the market. They ran past the rich houses, past the poor houses. Their straw shoes fell off, but Jack and Annie kept running barefoot. Just as the giant wooden gates started to close, they tore through them. They charged across the bridge and kept running up the dirt road, past the farmhouse and through the field. By the time they reached their tree, Jack's lungs ached, his heart pounded, his feet burned. He followed Annie up the rope ladder. When they got inside the treehouse, Jack collapsed.
Let's go home, he said out of breath.
He reached for the Pennsylvania book.
Wait,
said Annie, looking out the window.
They found each other.
Who found who?
Said Jack, panting. He dragged himself to the window and looked out. Two figures embraced at the edge of the field.
The silk weaver and the man who takes care of the cows, said Annie.
Oh, yeah, said Jack.
Bye,
Annie called to them. The couple waved back. Annie sighed happily.
We can leave now, she said.
Jack opened the Pennsylvania book and pointed at the picture of the Frog Creek Woods.
I wish we could go there, he said.
The wind started to blow. Jack looked out one last time at the Chinese couple. They seemed to be glowing like stars. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 10, The Ancient Legend. Jack opened his eyes. He was wearing his own clothes and his sneakers. The cloth sack had turned back into his backpack.
Welcome home, Master Librarians, said Morgan.
She stood in the treehouse, smiling at them.
Hi, said Annie.
We brought you the ancient legend, said Jack.
Wonderful, said Morgan. Jack reached into his pack. He took out the China book. Then he pulled out the bamboo book. He handed them to Morgan.
What's the legend about?
Said Annie.
It's called the Silk Weaver and the Cowherd, said Morgan. It's a very famous Chinese tale.
Guess what, Morgan? Said Annie. We actually met them. We helped them get together.
Oh, did you? Said Morgan.
Yes, said Jack. The silk weaver's ball of silk saved us.
What does the legend say about them? Asked Annie.
It says that long ago they were heavenly beings who lived in the sky, said Morgan. When they came to Earth, they fell in love.
That's when we met them, said Annie.
Yes, I imagine so, said Morgan. The book you brought back tells about their happiness on Earth. But I'm afraid a later legend tells us that when they returned to the sky, the king and queen of the skies separated them by a heavenly river called the Milky Way.
Oh, no, said Annie.
They get back together once a year, said Morgan. On that night, birds make a bridge in the sky over the Milky Way. Jack and Annie gazed up at the bright summer sky. Go home now, said Morgan. Come back 2 weeks from today. Next, you're going to find a book in the country of Ireland over 1,000 years ago.
That sounds like fun, said Annie.
Morgan frowned. I'm afraid it was a very dangerous time, she said, for Viking raiders often attacked the sea coasts.
Vikings?
Said Jack. He'd had enough danger to last a long time. Don't worry about it now, said Morgan. Just go home and rest. Jack nodded. I'll try, he said, pulling on his backpack.
Bye, said Annie. See you in 2 weeks.
Thank you for your help, said Morgan.
Any time, said Annie.
They headed down the rope ladder. From the ground they waved to Morgan, then they started for home. As they got to the edge of the woods, Annie stopped.
Listen to the crickets, she said.
Jack listened. The cricket chirps sounded louder than usual.
Their ancestors lived in the time of the Dragon King, said Annie.
Oh, brother, said Jack.
Right now the grown-ups are telling the little crickets a legend, said Annie.
Yeah, sure, said Jack.
A legend passed down from their ancestors, said Annie.
Jack smiled. He didn't want to admit it, but the cricket noise did sound like storytelling. He could almost hear them saying, Dragon King, Dragon King, Dragon King.
Jack! Annie! Came a voice.
It was their mother calling them. The spell was broken. The cricket stories were just plain old cricket sounds again.
Coming!
Jack shouted. Jack and Annie ran down their street and across their yard. Did you have a good time in China? Their mom asked.
It was pretty scary, said Annie.
We got lost at a tomb, said Jack, but we were saved by an ancient book. Their mom smiled and shook her head. My books are wonderful, aren't they? She said.
Yep,
said Jack and Annie, and they followed her inside. Viking Ships at Sunrise. Chapter 1. Before Dawn. Jack opened his eyes. A thin gray light came through his window. His clock read 5 a.m. All was quiet.
Today we're going to ancient Ireland, he thought, back more than 1,000 years.
Morgan Le Fay had told him that it was a very dangerous time, with Vikings raiding the coasts.
You awake?
Came a whisper. Annie stood in his doorway. She was dressed and ready to go.
Yeah, meet you outside, said Jack as he climbed out of bed.
He pulled on his jeans, t-shirt, and sneakers. He put his secret library card into his backpack with his notebook and pencil. Then he hurried downstairs. Annie was waiting for him in their yard. The air was damp and misty.
Ready?
She asked. Jack took a deep breath.
I guess, he said.
He was a little worried about the Vikings. They walked silently over the dewy grass. Then they ran up their street and into the Frog Creek woods. Mist clung to the trees as they walked through the dark woods.
It's hard to see, said Jack.
Where's the treehouse?
Asked Annie.
I have no idea, said Jack.
Just then something fell in front of them.
Watch out! Shouted Jack.
He covered his head.
The ladder! Cried Annie.
Jack opened his eyes. The rope ladder from the magic treehouse dangled in front of them. Jack looked up. The treehouse was hidden in the mist.
Come on, let's go, said Annie.
She grabbed the ladder and started up. Jack followed.
They climbed through the wet air and into the treehouse.
"Hello," said Morgan. "I'm glad to see you."
She was sitting in the corner. At her feet were the scroll they'd brought back from Roman times and the bamboo book from ancient China.
"I'm so glad to see you," said Jack.
"Me too," said Annie.
"It's good that you both came early," said Morgan. She reached into the folds of her robe and pulled out a piece of paper. "Here's the ancient story you must find today," she said. Morgan handed the paper to Jack. On it were the words, "Serpens Magna." The mysterious writing reminded Jack of the writing from their trip to the Roman town of Pompeii.
"That looks like Latin," he said.
"Very good," said Morgan. "It is Latin."
"But I thought they spoke Latin in ancient Rome," said Annie. "Aren't we going to Ireland?"
"You are," said Morgan. "But during the Dark Ages in Europe, educated people wrote in Latin."
"The Dark Ages?" said Jack.
"Yes," said Morgan. "The time after the fall of the Roman Empire."
"Why is it called dark?" said Jack.
"It was a difficult time," said Morgan. "People had to work very hard just to feed and clothe themselves. There was not a lot of time for playing, learning, or making art and music." Morgan pulled a book from her robe.
"Your research," she said, handing it to Annie. The title read, "Ireland Long Ago."
"Remember," said Morgan, "your research book will guide you, but in your darkest hour."
"Only the ancient story can save us," Jack and Annie said together.
"And remember this," said Morgan. "It must be your darkest hour, when there is no hope left. If you ask for help too soon, it will not come."
"And we have to find the story first," said Annie.
"That is true," said Morgan. "Do you have your secret library cards?" Jack and Annie nodded. "Show them to the wisest person you meet," said Morgan.
"Don't worry," said Annie. "I think we're ready now."
Annie pointed at the cover of the Ireland book.
"I wish we could go there," she said.
She gave Morgan a little wave.
"See you soon."
"Good luck," said Morgan. The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 2, The Steep Climb. Jack opened his eyes. The light was still gray, but the air was even damper and colder than in Frog Creek.
"Wow, I'm in a long dress," said Annie. "It's scratchy. Hey, I've got a little purse on my belt. It has my library card in it."
Jack looked down at his own clothes. He was wearing a shirt and trousers made of heavy wool. He also wore leather slippers, and in place of his backpack was a leather bag.
"Wow,"
said Annie, looking out the window.
"This really looks like the Dark Ages."
Jack looked out, too. He couldn't see anything through the mist.
"It's just because the sun's not up yet," he said. "I'd better check the book."
Annie handed the Ireland book to Jack. He opened it and read aloud.
"The early Middle Ages were once known as the Dark Ages because learning and culture nearly vanished throughout Europe. Scholars today praise the brave Irish monks who helped keep Western civilization alive."
"What do civilization and monks mean?" asked Annie.
"I think civilization is when people have books and art and good manners," said Jack. "Monks are religious people who spend their time praying and reading and helping people."
"Well, I don't see any civilization or monks out there," said Annie, pointing at the mist.
Jack pulled out his notebook. He wrote, "Brave monks in Ireland." Then he looked at Annie.
"If we find civilization, I think we'll find the lost story," he said.
"Let's go," said Annie.
She lifted her skirt and climbed out the window. Jack read more in the Ireland book.
"The monks copied the ancient writings of the Western world. Before printing was invented, all books had to be written and copied by hand."
Hey, we're on a cliff,
Annie called from outside.
Above the ocean.
Be careful, said Jack.
He stuffed the Ireland book and his notebook into his leather bag. Then he climbed out the window. Annie was peering over the edge. Jack looked too. There was a rocky shore 20 feet below. Waves slapped against the rocks. Seagulls swooped and glided above the sea.
It doesn't look like there's any civilization down there, said Jack.
Maybe we should climb those, said Annie.
She pointed to steep steps cut into the cliff. Jack looked up. The cliff also rose above them in the mist.
We better wait till the sun comes up, he said.
Let's just go super slow, said Annie.
She started up the stone steps.
Wait, Annie, said Jack. They might be slippery.
Whoa,
she said, almost falling backward.
I tripped on my darn dress.
I told you to wait, Jack said. It's too dangerous.
Just then something fell from above.
Watch it,
said Jack. He put his hands over his head.
Hey, it's a rope, said Annie.
Jack saw a thick rope dangling down the stairs.
Where'd this come from? He asked.
It's like when Morgan dropped the ladder to us, said Annie. I bet someone's trying to help us.
Yeah, but who? Said Jack.
Let's find out, said Annie.
She grabbed the rope.
I'll use it first. Once I'm at the top, you can come after me.
Okay, but hurry, he said, and be very careful.
Jack waited as Annie started climbing up the steps. Annie held on to the rope as she climbed slowly up the stairs. Soon she vanished over the top of the cliff.
What's up there?
Jack shouted, but his voice was lost in the sound of the waves. He grabbed the rope and started up the steep steps. At the top of the cliff, he pulled himself over the edge.
Aha! Boomed a deep, jolly voice. It's another little invader.
Chapter 3. Brother Patrick. Jack's glasses were wet with mist. He quickly wiped them, then looked up. A man in a brown robe stood before him. The man had a round red face. He was bald, except for a fringe of hair around his head. Nearby, the rope was tied around a tree.
I'm not an invader, said Jack.
He's Jack,
said Annie. She was standing behind the man.
I'm Annie. We're from Frog Creek, Pennsylvania.
We come in peace, stammered Jack.
The man's blue eyes twinkled.
Oh, do you now? He said. I wondered what was going on. I had dropped the rope so I could climb down the steps, but you two grabbed it instead. How in the world did you get on this island?
Jack stared at the man. He didn't know how to explain the magic treehouse.
In our boat,
Annie said quickly. The man looked puzzled.
Not many boats can come ashore at this dark early hour.
Well, we're very good sailors, said Annie.
Oh, brother, thought Jack. He hoped their sailing skills wouldn't be tested.
Where exactly are we? Asked Annie. And who exactly are you?
You're on an island off the coast of Ireland, the man said, and I am Brother Patrick.
Whose brother are you? Said Annie.
The monk smiled.
The brother means I'm a Christian monk.
Oh, you're one of the monks who saved civilization, said Annie.
The man smiled again. Annie turned to Jack and whispered,
Let's show him our cards. I trust him.
Okay, said Jack. He trusted the monk, too. They both pulled out their secret library cards and showed them to Brother Patrick. The M's and L's for Master Librarian shined in the gray light. The monk looked at them and bowed his head.
Welcome, my friends, he said.
Thank you, said Jack and Annie.
I did not truly think you were invaders, said Brother Patrick, but on our small island we are careful of strangers.
Why? Said Annie.
There are terrible stories about Viking raiders, he said. When we see their serpent ships, we must hide or be taken as slaves.
Serpent ships? Said Jack.
The prows of their ships are often carved in the shape of a serpent's head, said Brother Patrick. I am afraid it stands for their fierce, cold-blooded ways.
Jack looked at the misty gray sea.
"Do not worry," said Brother Patrick. "They cannot land safely on this island before daylight. They're not as good sailors as some people." He winked at Annie.
"Too bad for them," she said cheerfully.
"But tell me, why have you come here?" asked Brother Patrick.
"Oh," said Jack, "I almost forgot."
He pulled Morgan's paper from his leather bag. He showed the Latin words to the monk, Serpens Magna.
"This is the title of a story that we have to take back to our friend and teacher, Morgan Le Fay," said Annie.
"I see," said Brother Patrick.
He gave Jack and Annie a mysterious look.
"What's he thinking?" Jack wondered,
but the monk changed the subject.
"I think you would like to visit our monastery," he said.
"What's that?" said Annie.
"The place where we monks live and work," said Brother Patrick. "Come."
"But the sun's not up yet," said Jack. "Won't the others be asleep?"
"Oh, no," said Brother Patrick. "In the summer we rise long before daylight. We have much to do. You'll see."
The monk led them up a dirt path. Jack hoped their book was at the monastery. He wanted to leave the gloomy island with its threat of Viking invaders as soon as possible. A low bell started to ring. Jack saw a lonely church steeple against the gray sky ahead.
Chapter 4. Books of Wonder. The monastery had a stone wall all around it. Brother Patrick took Jack and Annie through the gate. Beyond the gate was a small church with a hanging bell. There was also a vegetable garden and 6 stone huts shaped like giant beehives.
"We grow all our own food," said Brother Patrick. "Carrots, turnips, spinach, wheat, and beans."
He led them to the entrance of the first hut. Jack and Annie peeked inside. A monk was pulling flat bread from a low stone oven.
"This is our bakery," Brother Patrick said.
"It smells good," said Annie.
"Come along," Brother Patrick said.
He pointed to each hut as they passed.
"There are our sleeping quarters," he said, "and that's where we spin our cloth. In here we cobble our sandals, there we carve our wooden tools."
In each of the huts, Jack and Annie could see monks. They were busy spinning or cobbling or carving. Finally, Brother Patrick came to the largest beehive-like hut.
"I have saved the best for last," he said. "This is where we do our most important work."
He stepped inside. Jack and Annie followed. The hut was warm and peaceful, yet very alive. It glowed with the golden light of many candles. Monks sat at wooden tables. Some were reading, others played chess. Best of all, some were writing and painting in books.
"This is our library," said Brother Patrick. "Here we study math, history, and poetry. We play chess, and we make books."
"Jack," said Annie, "I think this is it."
"What?" said Jack.
"Civilization," said Annie.
Brother Patrick laughed.
"Yes, this is where civilization hides," he said, "on top of our lonely island in the sea."
"Oh, man," said Jack, "I love this place."
"What kind of books do you make here?" asked Annie.
"Books of wonder," said Brother Patrick. "We record Christian stories as well as the old myths of Ireland."
"Myths?" said Jack.
"Yes," said Brother Patrick. "They were gathered from our storytellers, the old women who sing the tales of long ago when people believed in magic."
"Wow,"
said Annie.
"Come," said Brother Patrick. "Look at the book of Brother Michael. He has worked on it his whole life."
Brother Patrick led Jack and Annie over to an old monk. The monk was painting a blue border around one of the pages in a book.
"Michael, these 2 master librarians from far away would like to see your work," said Brother Patrick.
The old monk looked up at Jack and Annie. His wrinkled face broke into a smile.
"Welcome,"
said Brother Michael in a thin, shaky voice.
"Hi,"
said Annie. Brother Michael showed them the cover of his book. It was decorated with gleaming red and blue jewels. Then he turned the pages. Each was covered with fancy writing and delicate paintings in green, gold, and blue.
"I wish I could paint like that," said Annie.
"It's beautiful,"
whispered Jack.
"Thank you," said Brother Michael.
"How do you make a book like this?"
asked Annie.
"I write on sheepskin and use goose quill pens," said Brother Michael. "My paints are made of earth and plants."
"Wow," said Annie.
"Show Michael what you are seeking," Brother Patrick said.
"Oh, right," said Jack.
He pulled out the paper Morgan had given them. He showed the Latin writing to the old monk. Brother Michael nodded.
"Yes,"
he said with a smile.
"I know that one quite well."
Brother Michael turned to the page he had been painting with a blue border. He pointed to the writing at the top of the page.
"Oh, man,"
whispered Jack. The words were Serpens Magna. Chapter 5. Warships on the Waves.
"We found our story," said Jack.
"Yay," said Annie.
"Indeed," said Brother Patrick. "But alas, Brother Michael has not yet completed his work. You will have to return for it."
"Oh, shoot," said Annie.
Jack was disappointed, too. "I don't know if we'll be able to come back," he said.
"I don't know if we can even leave without the story," said Annie.
Brother Patrick looked puzzled. The two kids looked at each other, then back at Brother Patrick. It was too hard to explain about the treehouse and how the magic worked. Jack shrugged. "We'll just have to try," he said. Outside, the church bell began ringing. "It is time now for our sunrise prayers," said Brother Patrick. "Will you join us?" "Thanks, but we better try to go home now," said Jack. Brother Patrick nodded and led them into the garden. When he opened the gate, they stopped. The horizon glowed pink and purple. The sun had started to rise. No one spoke as the great fiery ball rose slowly over the ocean. Finally, Brother Patrick broke the silence.
"Shine, O light of the sun," he said softly, "on this day filled with wonder."
"That's beautiful," said Annie.
Jack smiled. He agreed. Brother Patrick turned to them. "It is such sights as this that inspire our bookmaking," he said. "Now go, and may God be with you on your voyage home."
"Thanks," said Jack and Annie.
"Do you need me to guide you to your boat?" he asked.
"I don't think so," said Jack.
"Follow the path to the top of the cliff," said Brother Patrick. "Then use my rope to help you down the steps."
"Okay," said Annie. "Bye."
And she went through the gate. Jack wanted to go home, but he hated leaving the monastery. It was filled with people doing his favorite things, reading and learning.
"I really like it here," he said to Brother Patrick.
"I'm glad, but you must go now, while the weather is with you," said the monk. "Everything can change in an instant." Then Brother Patrick turned and went into the church. Jack hurried out the gate. Before he went further, he stopped and pulled out his notebook. He quickly made two lists. To make a book, sheepskin, goose quill, paints. To make paint, earth, plants.
"Come on,"
Annie called from the top of the steps.
"Coming,"
Jack called. He put away his notebook and ran along the dirt path to the edge of the cliff. Overhead, flocks of gulls circled in the purple sky. Their cries sounded like screams.
"What's wrong with them?" Jack said.
"Maybe they always do this at sunrise," said Annie. "Let me go first."
Clutching the rope, she started down the steps. Jack grabbed the rope and started down. The birds' cries went on. They worried him. They sounded like warnings. Jack reached the rocky ledge and let go of the rope.
"Let's go,"
Annie called from the treehouse. Jack looked at the horizon one last time. His heart nearly stopped. A ship was outlined against the sky. Behind it, he saw two smaller ships. As the ships came into view, their bright sails were filled with wind, and their serpent prows blazed in the new sunlight.
"Oh, no," Jack whispered. "Vikings."
Chapter 6. The Vikings Are Coming.
Annie!" Jack cried. "Vikings!"
Annie looked out the treehouse window.
"Vikings?"
"They're headed straight for the island," said Jack. He turned back to the stone steps.
"Where are you going?"
cried Annie. "To warn the monks," Jack said.
"I'll come too," cried Annie.
She scrambled out of the treehouse.
"Hurry," said Jack.
Jack didn't even use the rope. He pulled himself up the steep steps with his hands. As Jack and Annie climbed up the face of the cliff, clouds began to cover the sun. When they reached the top, a fog had almost hidden the serpent ships.
"Run!"
cried Annie. The fog blanketed the whole island. Jack and Annie could barely see the path to the monastery. When they arrived at the gate, the misty white world was silent.
"Vikings!" Jack cried. "Vikings!"
"The monks are still in church," said Annie.
She yanked the bell rope. Dong, dong. Jack and Annie watched as Brother Patrick and the other monks ran out of the church.
"The Vikings are coming," Jack shouted.
Brother Patrick's rosy face turned white.
"Make haste," he said to the other monks. "Gather the books and hide."
The monks ran into the library. Brother Patrick turned to Jack and Annie.
"We have a secret hiding place, a cave on the other side of the island," he said. "You can come with us, but I am not certain you will be safe."
"Don't worry," said Jack. "We're going to try to go home."
"Do not use the steps," Brother Patrick said. "The Vikings will climb them."
"Then how do we get down?" said Jack.
"Go that way," said Brother Patrick, pointing. "At the cliff's edge are two large rocks. A path between those rocks will take you down to the shore. Then you can walk around to your boat."
"Thanks,"
said Annie.
"Be careful," said Brother Patrick.
He hurried inside the library.
"Wait,"
came a thin voice as Jack and Annie turned to run. It was Brother Michael. He hobbled over to them, holding out his book of Irish tales.
"Take it,"
he said.
"Are you sure?" Jack asked.
He knew it was Brother Michael's life's work.
"Please," said Brother Michael. "It is better that the world should have some of it than none at all, just in case."
"We'll take good care of it,"
said Jack. He gently placed the jeweled book in his leather bag.
"Good luck,"
said Annie. Annie and Jack waved goodbye to the old man. Then they raced to the rocks that Brother Patrick had told them about.
Chapter 7. Fog Bound. At the rocks, the seagulls still screeched. Jack could barely see the steep path leading down into the fog.
"Go slowly,"
Jack whispered to Annie as they started down.
"Oops,"
said Annie. She slipped and fell forward, bumping into Jack.
"My foot got caught in my stupid dress."
"Shh," said Jack.
He held on to Annie. They listened as pebbles and rocks rolled down the cliff. Jack took a deep breath.
"We've got to watch out for Vikings, too," he whispered.
They started down the steep path again. They went one step at a time. The sound of the waves against the rocks grew louder. Finally, they stepped down onto a flat strip of pebbles.
"Where are we?"
whispered Annie.
"I don't know,"
said Jack.
"Oh, look,"
said Annie. She pointed to the shoreline. Through the fog rose the serpent prows of the Viking ships. Jack and Annie crept closer to the ships. Their sails were down. Each ship had been tied to a tall, jagged rock. They seemed deserted as they bobbed in the shallow waves. Jack really wanted to check out the ships, but he was afraid of wasting time.
"We better find the treehouse," he said to Annie.
They crept away from the three Viking ships. Suddenly, they both froze. Through the mist, they saw a group of Viking warriors. The Vikings were looking at the top of the cliff. Their long yellow hair hung down from beneath their iron helmets. They carried round wooden shields and swords and axes.
"It looks like they're planning to climb the cliff," whispered Annie.
"We need to hide until they go," whispered Jack. "Then we can look for the treehouse."
"Let's hide in a ship,"
said Annie.
"Good idea,"
said Jack. They crept back to where the ships were tied. Jack was happy to see that the sides of the smallest ship were very low. They would easily be able to climb over them.
"You go first,"
said Annie. Jack waded through the shallow water. It was cold. He reached the ship and grabbed one side. He pushed himself up and onto the ship's deck. The ship jerked forward. Jack looked at the shore. It was now 30 feet away. The ship's anchoring rope was pulled tight. The serpent prow bobbed up and down with the waves. The fog and the movement of the ship made Jack feel as if he was in a dream. For a moment, he forgot to be scared of the Vikings.
"This is so cool," he called. "Come on, Annie."
Annie started to wade out to the ship. Suddenly, she disappeared.
"Annie?" called Jack.
Her head popped out of the water. She splashed with her arms.
It's deep," she gasped. "My dress too heavy."
"Use the rope," called Jack, "like when we climbed the stairs." Annie grabbed the rope that stretched from ship to shore. It held her weight as she began inching along it.
"Hold on tight," cried Jack.
I am," gasped Annie.
She kept going, hand over hand, along the rope toward the ship. When Annie got close to the ship, Jack reached out to help her. As he pulled her in, the side of the ship dipped down. Then the rope went slack, and the Viking ship slid out to sea. Chapter 8. Lost at Sea. Annie fell to the deck of the ship. Jack pulled the rope out of the water. The end of it was still tied in a loop.
"What happened?" asked Annie.
"We're heading out to sea," said Jack. "I guess all the pulling lifted the rope off the rock."
Annie sat up and looked at the misty whiteness.
"I can't see the island," she said.
"I can't see anything," said Jack.
Annie looked at Jack.
"Do you think this is our darkest hour?" she asked.
"I don't know," said Jack. "Maybe the book will help."
He pulled out their research book. He found a picture of a Viking ship. He read the caption aloud.
"Viking warships were the best ships of their times. When there was no wind, the crew would take down the sails and row with oars. The smallest ships had 4 rowers, and the largest had as many as 32. Rowers sat on boxes that stored their belongings."
"Great," said Annie, jumping up. "This isn't our darkest hour."
"Why do you say that?" asked Jack.
"There's still hope," said Annie. "We can row to the other side of the island and find the treehouse."
"Are you nuts?" said Jack.
"Please, Jack," said Annie. "Can we just try?"
She grabbed one of the oars. She could barely lift it.
"Forget it, Annie," said Jack. "It takes 4 big Viking guys to row this thing. You're too little. I'm too little."
"Come on, Jack, just try," said Annie.
"You get an oar, too. We'll sit on boxes across from each other."
"Oh, brother,"
said Jack. Annie dragged her long oar over to a storage box.
"I'm not doing this alone," she said.
Jack groaned. Then he dragged an oar to the box across from Annie.
"Cool,"
said Annie. She peered into a storage box.
"Look, one for each of us."
She lifted out 2 small Viking helmets.
"Maybe these were made for Viking kids who sometimes ride in this ship," said Annie.
"Maybe," said Jack.
He hadn't thought of Vikings as real people before, people with families and little kids. Annie pulled off her scarf and put a helmet on her head.
"Now I feel like a Viking too," she said.
"I bet it will help me row."
She handed Jack a helmet. He put it on. It made him feel a little different.
"I don't know about this," he said.
The helmet wasn't as heavy as the one he had worn in the time of castles, but it was still pretty heavy.
"Well, I'm braver with mine on," said Annie.
Jack smiled. He didn't know how Annie could be braver than she already was.
"Ready to row?"
she asked.
"Yep," said Jack.
He was feeling braver himself. The wind picked up as Jack lifted his heavy oar over the side of the ship. He lowered it into the water. But the current was so strong that the oar was ripped from his hands. Jack fell over backward as his oar slipped into the sea.
"I lost my oar,"
Annie yelled. Jack looked up as rain started to fall. The sky was black. A gush of seawater poured over the side of the ship.
"Brr,"
said Annie as she tried to stand. The black sky shook with thunder and flashed with lightning. Jack crawled to the side of the ship and pulled himself up. Another huge wave was coming right toward them.
"It's our darkest hour now," cried Annie. "Get Brother Michael's book."
Jack reached into his leather bag. He pulled out the jeweled book and held it up.
"Save us, Story," he cried.
He looked at the sea again. What he saw made him scream. Rising from the oncoming wave was a giant sea serpent. Chapter 9. Sea Monster. The serpent's head rose higher and higher above the water. Jack couldn't move.
"He's beautiful," said Annie.
"Beautiful," cried Jack.
The serpent's neck was as tall as a two-story building. Its green scales were covered with sea slime.
"Go away," shouted Jack.
"No, stay, help us," shouted Annie.
The great serpent glided closer to the ship. Jack ducked.
"Come on," said Annie. "You can do it. Get us to shore before the ship sinks."
Jack closed his eyes. He felt the ship jerk, then move forward. He looked up. They were gliding over the giant waves. Jack turned. The great serpent was pressing its long neck against the back of the ship, pushing it toward the shore. As the serpent pushed them, the wind grew calmer. The clouds lifted, and the water glittered with sunlight. The rocky shore grew closer. Jack could see the treehouse on the ledge above it.
"Hurry,"
Annie called to the serpent monster. The great serpent gave the ship one last push. The ship swooshed onto a sandbar near the shore. Jack put the jeweled book carefully back into his bag. Then he and Annie climbed out of the ship onto the wet sand. They looked back at the sea. The great serpent was rearing its long neck into the air. Its scales glittered pink and green in the sunlight.
"Bye,"
shouted Annie.
"Thanks a lot."
The monster seemed to nod at her. Then he dove into the sea and was gone. Jack and Annie headed toward the rocks. All of a sudden, Annie gasped.
"Uh-oh,"
she said, pointing to the top of the cliff. Two Vikings were staring down at them.
"To the treehouse," cried Jack.
The Vikings shouted and started down the steep stairs. Jack and Annie began scrambling up the rocks. They reached the treehouse and climbed inside. Jack grabbed the Pennsylvania book. Annie stuck her head out the window.
"Go home! Stop causing trouble!"
she yelled to the Vikings, who were almost to the ledge. Jack pointed at the picture of the Frog Creek Woods.
"I wish we could go there!" Jack shouted.
Just as the Vikings reached the ledge, the wind began to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still. Absolutely still.